what a huge obligation you're accepting when you put on the title coach and you put on the hat, the coaching hat. And it is, it's huge.
You're listening to the Building a Coaching Culture podcast. If you need to compete and win in the 21st century labor market as an employer of choice, this podcast is for you. Each week, we share leadership development, coaching, and culture development insights from leading experts who are developing world-class cultures in their own organizations. And now, here's your host, J.R. Flatter.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. J.R. Flatter here with Lucas.
Hello.
Sporting a new haircut.
Yeah, I wanted to match my son. He got a haircut.
So Declan is choosing his hairstyle now?
Pretty much. He always says he wants to look like his older nephews.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So anybody who follows Lucas and I knows we have four grandchildren who were born in the same year. And Declan's one of them. I'm amazed by all of them. All right. Topic of the day. Obstacles to coaching success. I think this is an interesting one, and we'll dive into it. And I've mentioned before, and I'll keep mentioning again because I'm an unapologetic capitalist, but I'm writing a book on this topic. And so it's fresh in my mind. I'm working on it every day. And so it's always top of mind. But, you know, what are the obstacles to coaching success writ large, but also specific to what we're calling corporate environments? And that's for-profit, non-profit, government, federal, state, local. I wouldn't say they're exactly the same in each scenario, but they're rather similar. There are some unique aspects to each one of those. But I think irrespective of, in one of our other topics, I think maybe the next topic is going to be, do I need a noun descriptor? And that's a geek way of saying something in front of coaching. Do I need to say I'm a leadership coach or an executive coach or a life coach or whatever noun descriptor you want? And it goes back to, you know, nailing your niche, which is a book that we talk about all the time. So when I think about the biggest obstacle to coaching success is self, and I hope that doesn't sound cliche or overworked. And so we educate hundreds of coaches a year, probably getting close to 1,000 a year now. And I don't think any student comes in with absolute confidence they have what it takes to be a good coach. I was just teaching our live coach training, I think Thursday of last week, and we have a new student coach from Australia. In his comment, I did an exemplar coaching session in class. So I coached someone in class, which we do a good bit of, watch a PCC coach, and then give one-on-one feedback. One thing you loved and one thing that made you scratch your head or you thought might have been done a little better. And we talk about those. But this particular student coach said, what a huge obligation you're accepting when you put on the title coach and you put on the hat, the coaching hat. It's a metaphor we regularly use. And it is, it's huge. It's very similar to leadership. Are you willing and able to lead? And in the 21st century, you and I talk about all the time, coaching as a style of leadership. And if you want to be an employer of choice in the 21st century, government, nonprofit, for-profit, you better have a coaching style of leadership for this 21st century labor market. And so getting your own head around the idea, you're willing to accept that obligation, and you will be able to change the path of the life of the person you're coaching, personally and professionally.
I like how you brought it up as self, like that larger topic, because, you know, it manifests in the way that we've already talked about with, it's almost like that imposter syndrome, like I'm not who I say I am, or I'm not who they think I am, and I'm not going to be able to affect the client or the leader the way that I want to. But then the other side of that coin is, I'm thinking about myself and I'm inserting myself and maybe not giving the client the space they need to explore the issues. And I'm maybe, you know, inserting my own thoughts and desires and beliefs. So I think sometimes it's easy to say, oh, I'm inserting myself too much, but then you insert yourself too much when you have that thought that, oh, I'm not good enough, kind of.
Yeah, that's really an interesting juxtaposition. I've never thought of it that way. You're always coaching me whether you intend to or not. So you've just reminded me of, am I a mentor or am I a coach? Which is a big part of self. Do I have the confidence to say, I'm not sure, let's figure this out, and put that leader in the driver's seat and buckle yourself into the passenger seat, depending on where you are in the world, which side of the vehicle you're in. Yeah, that takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of self-confidence. And, you know, put my professor hat on for a second and differentiate between confidence and efficacy. You can be a really confident person and still not have the self-efficacy to go out and coach successfully. And the difference in my mind between confidence and efficacy is confidence is an overarching self-belief generally, whereas efficacy is more specific. And so if I have efficacy to stop smoking, or if I have efficacy to begin exercising, that's a confidence in self that I know what I need to do, and I know that I have the discipline to go do it. So when I think about coaching, it's much more of an efficacy discussion than it is a confidence discussion. I remember very distinctly looking at this 2-inch thick calculus book on my desk, knowing all the answers were in there, but not knowing how to get them out. At that time in my life, I really didn't have the efficacy to know I knew how to learn. And the same thing applies with coaching. You can read a book. There's several amazing books out there on coaching, and we talk about a lot of them. And then watch others coach. That's why we do the exemplar sessions in our education programs. But then to put the coaching hat on and sit in the coaching chair and deliver coaching, it's an entirely different thing. And in an academic environment versus, as Lee Collier says, one of our lead facilitators and part of our cohort, coaching in the wild. And then every session that you coach, I've been coaching for a long time, and I still have several people in my coaching world that I coach. Every time I sit in the chair, there's that hint of, is this going to work today? And so I'm still, even after all these years, struggling with self. And I have self-confidence that's off the charts, and I have self-efficacy that's off the charts, approaching hubris, some might say. And I still, every time I sit down, and as I've said in the past, and I think we'll continue to say, that comes from a good place. If you can learn to control it and it doesn't overwhelm you, that hint of doubt is your desire to coach well, to lead well.
Yeah, I guess it makes me think about, like, you're in a particular role and you might have a thought like somebody else can be doing, you know, this if they follow the same procedure, like, oh, I'm following coaching guidelines or standards or lessons. So what am I bringing to the table that somebody else can't? And maybe that brings your confidence down. And I guess that is something that, you know, it's a common thought that I have sometimes, but I guess it's the difference between, you know, other people can be, or, you know, your job can even be replaced by AI someday, but it's like the reality is right here, right now, like I'm here with this client or I'm here. So I guess it's almost like you're thinking about the big picture when, you know, it's a very, like, you should have your boots on the ground and be thinking about the moment. And I guess we talk about mindfulness too.
No, that's great. Yeah, so you remind me of several things as I listen to you. And first one is the burden of work is on the leader and not you. A lot of new coaches have stacks of material in front of them. And it's like having an open book calculus test. If you haven't studied the material and understand it, the open book doesn't really help you a lot. And so understanding the fundamentals and all of the teaching that you and I have done, I think we boil it down to who, what, and how, and avoid why. If you're asking who, what, how, and avoiding the judgmental why, you're probably going to ask a powerful question. And you've said it a couple of times already. If you ask a question or you make an observation that's not for your own curiosity or your own benefit, but for the benefit of the leader that you're coaching, it's probably going to be a powerful question or a powerful observation. And so growing confident in your ability to do that, another observation from last week's sessions, because I did a few exemplar sessions last week, was how comfortable I was being silent. And when I think about self, and do I have the next powerful question or the next powerful observation, I've told myself and I've affirmed to myself, I don't need to have that next powerful observation nor question while I'm listening. And if I do, I'm probably prejudging what I should say or do when I shouldn't. I should be listening. And the silence is not purposeful, it's genuine. Now, we teach our student coaches, be silent, but be silent for a practical purpose, not for an effect. And that practical purpose is you're giving the leader more time to talk. And actually, I counted 5 Mississippi and then started talking. And the very second I did, the leader jumped in. If I had only been silent 1 Mississippi more, but that happens pretty regularly. Doesn't mean it's a mistake. But also, and probably equally important, in that silence, I'm going through a list of what's the next powerful thing or the next observation I can make. And one of those things is this for the leader? Is it for their benefit? And if I can't convince myself that it is, I don't ask it or I don't say it. But all going back to this idea of self, I have no idea what we're going to talk about in every session we come into, regardless of where we're at in the arc of the conversation, regardless of where we're at in the arc of our relationship, because forming trust and safety and the clock is not our friend. Regardless how long we have, it's bounded by time almost always. So I'm 100%, I wouldn't say comfortable, but I'm 100% assured that it's okay and that I don't need to know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice. You know, like it is success if you get the client talking, and that also takes the burden off of you in that moment. You know, I don't have to think of anything, you know, clever or like, you know, interesting as long as they're talking. And then also, you can get the self-efficacy, you know, Flatter Leadership Academy, JR, the other instructors have said from the outside observing you that you are ready and that you are capable. So training can be that way to say, like, to lean on a little bit.
No, that's right. So let's focus on the leader. So we focused on self for a little bit, and you were talking about some of the obstacles to success. And one of those is the leader themselves. And I don't say training when I talk about humans, because I tend to think I train dogs. I don't train humans. I educate humans. And there is a big difference. There is some training that we need. How do you ask a powerful question? That's probably not rote memorization, but there's some method there. Who, what, and how, and avoid why. But you do the same thing to the leaders that you're working with. You educate them on this coaching thing. And we have pre-coaching, what we call usually the agreement phase of the relationship, where you're saying, this is how many sessions, over what length of time, and here are the boundaries of coaching. And they're not absolute. There's some overlap, certainly. And this is who I am, and this is what I stand for, and they're telling you the same thing outside of coaching. So we don't have our coaching hat on yet. But once you get in the coaching room, which is one of our metaphors that we use regularly, bounded in some sense, no distractions, just you and the leader. We've said for a long time ghosts, and I'm moving away from the idea of having ghosts in the room, because some of the topics we talk about regularly in coaching don't weave into having a ghost in the room. So I'm calling them invited guests, I think. They're trying to. I, as a coach, might uninvite them with your permission. So we're in the coaching room, we're in a coaching relationship. Could be the first session, could be the sixth session. And I'm educating the leader that I'm working with. Things like, when I'm silent, I'm not silent for effect, I'm silent for a reason. And when you're silent for a reason. But also, if you think about competency seven, we follow the International Coaching Federation competencies. So competency seven talks about evoking awareness, which is largely new awareness. And so when I'm working with a leader in trying to develop their, facilitate the development of their coaching, I'm educating them on what my expectations are of them and what their expectations of me. And so getting them involved isn't, you flip on the light switch and suddenly they're 100% invested, they're 100% knowledgeable about what this coaching thing is yet. So there's a lot of leader development that goes on too, to get beyond the obstacles of growth or the obstacles of success. Growth is ultimately the objective. And think about competency three of the ICF competencies is what we call the baseline. And there's four components of that. And each of those four, you have to educate the leader that there's an expectation they're going to pick something to talk about in that session. We ask questions like, what would be the best value? What's the best use of our time? Trying not to bound it. And then we literally ask, what are some obstacles that might be between us and that success? How do we know when we got there? What does it look like? And then what's important to you as a human being to that outcome? And that's entirely focused on the leader. So we have the self-efficacy that we can make this happen. And now we're working with the leader to give them that same efficacy.
Yeah, I just had the thought that this really begins like pre-session one or session zero, like when we're forming the agreement and kind of defining what coaching is going to look like for that relationship. Think about like syllabus day in a college course, like these are the expectations. This is, you know, how long it's going to go. I need you to participate in these ways to really kind of set up that whole, like we, like you said, we are kind of looking at it in a holistic way. Like I've seen this happen before with other clients and now I'm going to take the existing structure, but maybe they've never been coached before. So,
Yeah. A common sentiment from leaders is in agreement phase, session one, session two, I can't even tell you what I'm having for dinner tonight. How could I possibly tell you where I want to be in 30 years, where I want to be in 5 years, 1 year, a month? And part of the self-efficacy, but also part of the education is you can do that. And you, depending on what your vision is or what you want to accomplish in your lifetime, in your career, with your family, you're probably doing a lot of that already. And maybe you've never brought it into your conscious mind. And so part of success of coaching is getting past the obstacle of, I don't know. We coach a lot of Gen Zs, and Gen AAs are coming quickly behind them. When you ask a 20-something-year-old, where do you want to be in 30 years? The first thing, first reaction is denial. Don't make me do that. Don't make me think about 50-something-year-old me. But it's a necessary component, and it can be and often is an obstacle to success. We're all, most of us, thinking about retirement. We buy homes with 30-year mortgages. If we have children, your son will be 5 in June. You're thinking already about, how am I going to pay for his education? Because it's going to be here sooner than you think. A member of our family just turned 18 yesterday, and so she's off to college soon. And do we have everything in place to prepare ourselves for that? I'm just reminding myself, we talk about and coach to the personal and the professional. So that can be another obstacle to success, is that people are more comfortable talking about professional because they think about coaching in a professional sense. But when you really start scratching on your the surface of your life and digging into some of these topics, it's almost always an intersection of personal and professional. So that's yet another obstacle to success of coaching.
Yeah, think about that challenge of, you know, tell me what your goals are, whether it's like in the next 5 years or, you know, long term, 30 years. And it's almost like an improv thing, like, or a storytelling thing, like tell me a story about your life in the future. And the more that you practice the improv, like, okay, here's an idea, run with it, you know, add on another sentence to this story. Maybe you can't do that off the top of your head the first time, but yeah, like after a couple of sessions or after the end of the relationship, it's like, okay, now tell me. And it's through that practice of being coached, you're kind of going through and building those fundamentals. I never thought about it that way.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the last thing on this topic I wanted to touch on is a lot of the leaders you and I work with, our business is largely focused on B2B and B2G, business to business and business to government. And so we find ourselves a lot of time in a sponsored environment where someone other than the leader we're coaching is paying for the coaching. You know, and that's an obstacle to coaching from a lot of coaches, is that they're service-minded. If you look at the profession of coaching and you look at the core values and ethics of coaching, it's inundated with the service mindset, which I have and you have, a strong service mindset. But at the end of the day, if you're in a coaching practice, revenue has to exceed expense. And getting beyond that, it was a challenge for me for a long time. And oftentimes I revisit that. So that can be a personal obstacle to success. But from a sponsored obstacle is, you know, what are your obligations to the sponsor in a confidential coaching relationship? Whether you're coaching as a style of leadership or whether you're a coach embedded in the organization that you work with, or you're an outside coach coming in coaching in a sponsored environment. So in the agreement phase, and usually it's in the contracting phase, when I'm talking to the sponsor, if it's a new sponsor, I have to be very frank with them about what coaching is and what their opportunity to participate is. And they have to accept the reality that it's very little. When I get into a coaching relationship, you know, it's pretty much sealed off. What we discuss, be it personal or professional, trust and safety, and therefore confidentiality. We coach dozens of the leaders in the same organization regularly, and the same coach might be coaching a handful of those leaders. And we all talk to each other confidentially, agnostically, not violating confidentiality, about themes, how we might work together to get through those themes. But if the leader doesn't, at the core of their essence, believe that they're actually in a confidential relationship, they're not going to share the intimacy that you need in that sponsored environment.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to some technical topics where, you know, you've got this system that's separated from everything else for security purposes, but maybe there's one interface where I can access the data externally. So maybe the, you know, organization can access the client through like a 360 evaluation or, you know, other meetings outside the coaching relationship. So I guess setting up that expectation that, like, these are the ways that we're going to, you know, unveil certain things, but the relationship itself is this secure platform that nobody's touching.
Well, that's a great analogy. You and I both have top secret clearances. We've known each other your whole life and we interact regularly, but there are just some things we don't talk about of the need to know, which is one of those classic lines from the classified world. And it's very real. It's not cliche at all. And the same is true of a coaching relationship. I might be coaching the person sitting next to you in the office, and you'll never hear anything about it simply because it's just being super vigilant to protect that confidentiality. Now, in the rarest of instances, and these go to the parameters of the coaching relationship, you may need to break that confidentiality. In all of my coaching in sponsored environments, I've never come across personal example. I know it's one instance, it's one of our case studies, where the coach ended the coaching relationship after working with the leader for months and months. So that one example across the entire parameters of our coaching world. But threats of harm to self, threats of harm to others, threats of malice toward the sponsor. And I don't mean talking about disliking your boss or thinking the culture isn't as strong as it could be. You know, those are things that come up regularly in coaching conversations, and they're not opportunity to bring the sponsor in. But if I were in a coaching relationship and the leader said, as soon as I'm finished here, I'm going to go sledgehammer my computer at work and resign. Certainly, we'll talk about that in the coaching room, but I might think about, this is going to require me to go talk to the sponsor or some other action. But again, it's never happened yet. The potential remains there. So I know that only scratches the surface about what some of the obstacles are. But I think for me, and again, magic question from every coaching session is, what do you know now that you didn't know 30 minutes ago, 40 minutes ago, 50 minutes ago? For me, it's bucketing obstacles into those three buckets. Things that I'm presenting myself, challenges the leader may present, and then challenges that a sponsor directly or indirectly might present. You know, another thing that I talk to sponsors about regularly is, first, we tell them we're going to coach at the intersection of personal and professional. We tell them about confidentiality and staying true to the competencies and the ethics of the coaching profession. But we also tell them, you have to give us maximum autonomy. And that's just an absolute. No stated objectives other than growth of the leader, growth of the leadership bench as an enterprise, maybe some discussions about return on investment. You know, for every dollar you spent, what might you expect back? And it isn't always direct revenue, but oftentimes that, you know, that bottom line is very important. But increased retention, decreased recruiting costs because the world's starting to say you have an amazing culture and you want to work there.
Yeah, I would just say, and I think you were hinting at this a moment ago, but just being aware of these challenges, whether it's with your own approach or with the particular challenges of the client, being aware of them so you can mitigate or at least have some plan of, oh, you know, I usually talk too much, so this time I'm going to try to stay in the background a little bit more. Those little things that you can adjust to make your coaching more effective, being aware of the challenges, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, and I think it'll increase your efficacy knowing these three buckets. And when you're thinking in the silence of your pauses, you're thinking about each of those three buckets and how they might inform your next question or your next observation. All right, my friend, have a great day. And I'm sure we'll see you soon.
Well, that concludes this episode of Building a Coaching Culture. I truly hope that this episode was helpful to you. If it was, be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Maybe stop and give us a rating or a review and share this podcast with someone who might find it helpful as well. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.